This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
In that moment of just uncertainty, it was like, that was very physical. It was very like sitting with the unknown, and like your body's wired for survival. Predictability is survival. So when things are unpredictable, your body goes into like real, like, whoa, what's going on? That moment for me, even though I knew it was like, this is a moment, we're going to get back together very soon, this is okay. That period for me was me doing exactly what I preach of like, I'm going to sit with myself. I'm going to feel what's going on. This is a hard moment. I got support. It's okay. I trust in the universe that this is going to end good. This is happening for us. And I'm going to sit with myself and I'm going to take care of myself through this moment.
I'm Doug Bopes, personal trainer, best-selling author, and entrepreneur. And I'm on a mission to help others become the best version of themselves. So I'd like to welcome you to the Adversity Advantage podcast, where we will help you use obstacles, failures, and setbacks to give you that edge needed for success. I'll be interviewing people from all walks of life on how they overcame trials and turned them into triumphs. So please sit back, relax, and get ready to be absolutely blown away by some of the wisdom and stories you're about to hear.
Welcome back to another episode of The Adversity Advantage. I'm your host, Doug Bopes, and today's guest is JT Barnett. JT is a former professional athlete turned founder, content creator, and social media expert. He is the founder of Barnett, a marketing agency centered around social strategy and execution for both Fortune 500 companies and small businesses. He also creates his own content on all social platforms around the topics of business, marketing, and lifestyle to an audience of over 1 million people. Today on the show, we discuss how JT let his dreams die and transformed his identity from hockey player to content creator and founder. We also talk about how to win the war with your mind when you're going through adversity, why JT is super excited to become a father one day, how to embrace discomfort and use pain to your advantage, how JT has dealt with some of the toughest moments of his life recently, why you must dealing with your mental health a priority, how JT learned to reparent himself, how JT would document his story today and create content if he had to start all over, and so much more. So let's get this conversation going and welcome JT Barnett to the Adversity Advantage podcast.
JT, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, brother. Very excited.
Me too. Take me back to the off season after the 2017-2018 hockey year when you were playing professionally. Talk about what happened during that off season, the emotions, like all the things, and then how that led you to doing what you're doing now.
So 2017-2018, when I got done with that season, I decided that I wanted to retire from hockey. The place that I was in with hockey was I had played professional now for 5.5 years. I never cracked the NHL. I got to play preseason. I got to go to training camps. I got to train heavily with a lot of actual NHL players, but I never made the NHL. However, I got the opportunity to go play in Russia, which was kind of like the next level down between besides the NHL. It was the next best league in the world. So I got the opportunity to go play over there. And after that year, I came back home and I was preparing to make another run back at the NHL in the US. And when I came back home, I talked to my agent. He had been like, things are promising for you. Obviously, you can never guarantee that you're going to get a contract, but like, I'm going to do my best. And like, things are looking really good for you. And so I prepared that whole offseason thinking that I was going to get some sort of lucrative contract in the US. Not in the NHL, but like that there was still going to be chances of like getting there. And what ended up happening was I waited and I waited and I was waiting for my agent to call me and tell me that he had something. I would follow up with him. He'd be like, I'm still talking. And towards the end of the summer, it just started to hit me a little bit that it was like, shoot, like maybe I'm not going to get a contract. Like, no way. Like I just went and played in Russia. Like I feel like I'm ready to come back and like do this. And long story short, my agent ended up being like, look, I don't have any offers for you. And this was at the end of summer. And I had not prepared to go down to the next league. So I didn't have a contract in that league either. So it was like, now we're in like a really tough situation where for the in the top couple of leagues in the US, we haven't prepared for anything, and now teams are full. It was at the end of summer to where I had to make the decision of if I'm going to go overseas or if I'm going to actually go down a couple of leagues within the US. And so I made the decision to go overseas, but I had this moment where I was like, dude, what are we doing this for still? Like, you've now met a person that you want to spend the rest of your life with who lives in Los Angeles. Your family, my sister at that age was like 5. My brother was like 7 or 8. So it was like, you have 2 young siblings that are now that you can be home with, and you're going to go overseas again for a whole nother year. And I just was like, I kind of feel like I'm done with it. So I made the decision. I was like, I'm going to go to France, which is the league that's over there on the other side. And I'm going to spend the year where I'm going to play, but I'm going to spend the time outside of playing on doing other things that feel fun, that feel like it could be the next thing that I do. So I spent that whole year messing around on Instagram. I spent that whole year making content. I made a podcast during that year. I just did a lot of different creative things. And after that season, that was 2017, when I came home and I was like, I now am completely done with hockey. I'm moving into social media as my next path. And that was it.
So did you already start to like reestablish your identity in the social media space? Like, you knew that that's what you were going to do like long-term while you were towards the end of your hockey career? Because I know that like hockey was your thing. Like, I know like your dad is heavily involved in the NHL, repped Wayne Gretzky, who's obviously like seen by many as the greatest hockey player of all time. Like, you're in that world and that's like your whole identity. So I'm curious, like, what was that process like of like reinventing like who you were and like letting go of that dream that you had been chasing for so long and then stepping into this new identity in the social media space?
You know what? Honestly, this is a thing that I think actually I had to my benefit. Most professional athletes, when they leave the sport, they're like, that was my only identity. I actually think my struggle while I was playing sports was I felt like that my identity was limited by being an athlete. So I was like, I know there's so much more that I want to do, and I feel like this sport limits me in ways where, so I was, that was hard for me while I was playing it. But when I retired, it was like, this is actually probably going to benefit you in a different way than most people experience when they are done with this. That was all that they knew. Whereas for you now, it's like, you actually kind of go and explore these other things that you were saying that you were more of. So the challenge for me when I retired was, how do I step into these things that I've told people that I'm going to go do and that I felt like I was going to go do and actually like double down on betting on myself, where now I have no job backed up. I have no schooling backed up. I had no money saved. I was moving into a new city. There was just like a lot of new that was like, you got to really bet on yourself if you're going to do this. So that was my challenge.
A lot of people, they have a hard time like stepping into something new because of what their parents may say. I know I've heard you say that a big draw for you to hockey was to be close with your dad because your dad was in that world. And like, that was just a way for you guys to have like a unique bond over that. What was that like? Like, when you walked away from the sport and jumped into social media, like, what was his reaction? How did you guys respond to that together?
You know, my dad's always been super supportive with it in the ways that he's known how to. So my dad has always supported me. I think social media was just so foreign that it was like, he just didn't really understand what it is that I was doing. He's like, you're on an app and like you're posting photos and like people are going to pay you for that. How does that, like, that's not a real job, or that's not like something that, it's just, it was so new. So the way that he responded was great. I mean, my dad was like, I'll support you whatever. If you want to play hockey for another year, if you want to go, my dad tried to line me up with jobs. He's like, if you want to go work here, you can go there. I think my dad just wanted me, my dad wanted to protect me in the way of like what worked for him. He was like, let me try and make this work for you so that you don't have to struggle, so that you can jump into something because I want to support you. So my dad's way of doing that was like, he was like, do you want to go be an agent like I was? Do you want to go take interviews with like CAA and big, you know, big agencies and things like that? And it wasn't what I wanted to do, but like in hindsight, I'm like, yo, he really tried to help set me up with something. I'm glad that I didn't do it because I love what I do, but he was very supportive. He was definitely there for me of like, if you want to be done with hockey, even earlier in my career, if you want to be done, be done. Like, if you don't want to do this, the first and foremost thing is like, make sure it's something that you actually want to be doing. So he was supportive the whole way through.
And I know a lot of that world, like you fall into this survival mindset where you don't know when the next paycheck's coming. You don't know like when you're going to make the next team. You don't know when you're going to get the next callback. Was there any kind of process for you to like have to unlearn some of that stuff as you dove into your social media career?
Paychecks coming, all that, like, bro, I mean, dude, I literally retired from hockey with $0. I had no money in my bank account. I had no jobs lined up. I had no college degree. I didn't even know what I was going to go do in Los Angeles. I had never lived in Los Angeles. I just was, and I was moving in with my girlfriend. So I was like, this is just all new, but it never felt worrisome for me. I was like, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to do things that are scrappy. I'm going to like, I know what my expenses are per month. I'm going to figure that out and I'm going to get there. And so I asked myself, like, what are the things that I know I can make money from right now that also feel like they're benefiting me to do the things that I want to do? First thing for me was personal training. It was like, I know that I want to film content. I know that I want to put myself out there on social media. I also know that I work out every single day. So I'm going to personal train. I'm going to train friends of mine. I'm going to take on clients. And that's how I'm going to be making some money. So I started doing that. Then I started posting videos of my personal training, of me training and of others training. And from there, people started following me a little bit more to the point where I was able to do smaller influencer deals. So then it was like, okay, my income now is personal training and it's being somewhat of a small influencer. And then once the influencer stuff started getting a little bit bigger, that was when I was like, okay, now I want to actually start a business and actually like go all in on this. It never felt like I can't do this. It was just like, I'm going to have to be okay with being really scrappy and being really like, there's a little bit of survival in this because I don't have anything lined up and I just got to make it work.
Do you think that situation with, you know, not having any money, not really having much of a plan, not knowing many people in LA, do you think that is like your greatest asset now with what you do? Because it's, I mean, it can be challenging to make it in the world that you play in.
I think the biggest asset for me was that I'm a people person. I would say I'm not afraid to ask for help in the sense of if I don't know something, I feel like I can find the person that does know it and I'm okay with telling them, I don't know it. Can you help me with it? And so when I first got done playing hockey, I would probably get on the phone an hour a week or 2 hours a week, just calling people that I met through Instagram DM and just picking their brain of like, how did you build this business? How are you building your profile as a creator? What do I need to know in the industry that I'm in? How are you seeing things that are successful? And I would just pick people's brains. I would literally just ask them questions. I'd be like, I'm so appreciative of your time. How can I help you? And that was probably the thing that got me to learn the most. And I still do that today. I still am calling people and being like, dude, I don't really understand this. Can you help me? And you'd be surprised at how many people actually want to help and how that really builds real relationships.
I get asked a lot about how can somebody start documenting their story? And I know that you are a prime example of somebody who did this, somebody who helps other people do this now. What advice, if you were to start documenting your story today and you had no social media presence at all, but you just wanted to share your life, like how would you start doing so?
If I were to start from scratch today, documenting my story, I would pick something that feels like the lowest amount of take on in terms of the creative production. Like, what am I filming on and where am I posting it and how am I getting this out into the world? Because the challenge that I think with documenting yourself and putting yourself out there is, especially when you're first starting, the load that you want to take on is the feeling of uncomfort of putting yourself out there. And so what happens is if you just focus too much on making the production look perfect, you're trying to, in a way, you're trying to like skip past that uncomfort of feeling like you're being seen when it's not like absolutely done to the T. So what I would say is you want to be able to practice in whatever way that you can, putting yourself out there and it being received, putting yourself out there and it being received and doing it consistently. So I would say, what's the easiest thing that I can do to film my pieces of my current life to where I don't have to go out of my way? I'm showing the things that I'm already doing and getting into the flow of showing this and putting it out, showing this and putting it out, showing this and putting it out. And through consistency, you actually start to realize different ways that you can make it look nicer, different ways that people find it more appealing, different ways that it actually does work in the platform that you're on. So I would say, like, it's similar to working out. When you start a training program, if you've never worked out before in your life, you do not go all out, balls to the wall, 10 out of 10 intensity, and try to have that every single day for a year. You know, you have to like, you have to like increase the load. You have to like progressively add the amount that you're doing per day. You can't do that on day one. So it's the same thing with putting yourself out there as a creator. It's like, how can I do this consistently and just continue building it up? And so if I were to start right now, I would be like, I want to do this as easy as possible to where at the beginning, it feels like a 2 out of 10 on challenge level. And then like, it just will, you'll get better and better at it. You'll start understanding what people want to see, what people want to hear. And from there, that's when things can really be built.
What are some of the biggest limiting beliefs you hear people say consistently when it comes to starting fresh on social media?
It's never too saturated. Anybody that thinks it's too saturated should go walk down the water aisle at Whole Foods or Ralph's or Vaughn's. It's like every year there's brand new water that is being packaged and sold. Can't innovate on water that much. So it's the it's the way that you position yourself. That's never too saturated. There's always room for something that's a different angle and a different take and more unique. So I don't think that people need to worry about it being too saturated, especially like think about how unique everybody is. Everybody's so different than one another. When you really look at yourself, your story, the things that you have to offer the world, we're all so different that the more that you lean into being authentic and actually asking yourself, what makes me unique? What is my own angle on this? The more you're naturally going to stand out. So it's never too saturated. And you alleviate it being saturated by just being you.
One of the things that I know you're excited to start documenting when it happens is when you're a dad. And I know that you've said that you feel like that's like your life's purpose is to be a father. And you're super excited for that. Why do you think it's going to be so meaningful for you?
The reason that I knew that I wanted to be a dad was when I started reparenting myself. When I got done playing hockey, I started going to therapy. Actually, I started going to therapy before I got done playing with hockey. It's been 8 years now. When I started going to therapy, my therapist said something to me. She was like, you need to go and sit down and actually look across from the room that you're in at a chair and picture your 8 to 10 year old self on that chair. And have a conversation with that 8 to 10 year old self and ask him, what do you feel like you didn't get in your upbringing? What do you feel like is hard for you right now? And how can I be there for you and genuinely support you and like actually help you? And all of us go through different things in our upbringing that we feel like we didn't get or it didn't land the way that we wanted it to. No matter if your parents are perfect or not, you still just go through hard things when you're a kid that are hard on you as a kid. And so as an adult, when you become an adult, in my opinion, it's no longer your parents' responsibility to parent you. It's no longer your parents' responsibility to course correct and change everything that happened in the past. I feel like I became an adult when I had that conversation with my younger self and was like, look, Mom and dad are not going to be the people that are going to come and just fix everything for you and just change everything for you. I'm going to be the person that's going to do that for you now. And when I had that conversation with myself, it was like, first of all, it was super emotional. I was like, geez, like this is, I can't believe that I never had this before. This is really hard, but it's also really helpful because now that part of me, which everybody has, that younger part of you is still within you. That part of me was like, yo, I believe him and I trust him. And so now I trust myself. When that happened for me, the feeling that I got of having that conversation with myself and actually knowing that my younger self felt like it felt my trust was like, oh man, I'm going to love being a dad. I can't wait till this is actually a human being outside of me that I bring into the world and can like raise him to feel the love that I have for this little kid. And so that was the moment for me where I was like, okay, I know that I really want to be a father. I know that that's going to be something that's really purposeful for me, and something that I'm really going to enjoy. And then I also think the second part of it is, with all that I can do within my business, the thing that I think I can do the most is the people that come after me in my own family, my children, their children, my children's children's children, and the generations that come after that. And so I think there's only so many ripples that I can make with my business that when I'm gone, it will still be around. Whereas my kids are the legacy that lives on when I'm gone. And so I think that that's the most important thing that I can do. And the most important role that I have is being a dad and being a father to those kids, so that when I'm gone, they have those values and those, that self-esteem instilled in them that they're going to go and give to their kids. And then that gets passed on and passed on and passed on. I think that the legacy gets built more from my children than it does from my business. So I think that being a dad is the most important thing that I'll do.
That's amazing, man. I'd love to hear, like, what was the biggest thing you had to learn to reparent yourself with as an adult? Like, what was something that you felt like you weren't getting that you had to figure out how to get for yourself?
I think it was that me not following my own intuition and doing the things that I want to do, because I feel like I don't want to hurt other people's feelings or not listen to them or not live the exact same way as them. The understanding that that me not listening to myself is actually doing everybody a disservice. And I think that so let me just explain. I recognize that I, growing up, was always the peacekeeper. I was always the dude that wanted to make sure everybody was happy. And what I learned from that was, I even would try to keep the peace, even if it meant sacrificing myself and, like, not following my own intuition and not caring about myself and not actually, like, doing the things that I really wanted to do, just because I put other people's feelings and emotions and well-being over myself. And not in it, in doing 8 years of therapy now, my parents never wanted that. My coaches never wanted that. Like, nobody asked for that. I did it because I felt like I was helping. I felt like that was something that I loved to do, was take care of other people and make them feel good. But I didn't know the balance and I didn't know the boundaries. And so I was doing it in disservice to myself. And so when I started going to therapy, she was like, you're not doing this, 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 and this of things that you actually love. And you're not doing them because you feel like it's going to let other people down or make other people feel uncomfortable, or it's different than what other people do or how they do things. And that's okay. And so that was a big thing for me, is just like, I am at my best when I listen to myself first and foremost, and I follow myself first and foremost. And then after that, it's how is my best version of myself aligned with all of these other people and all these other things in my life? But first, I have to listen to me.
How have you learned to do that during times of stress? Because I know, like, you know, in the last couple of years, you've had adversity in your personal life, you've had adversity in your professional life. And there's been times where it could have been easy to make an impulsive decision and do something else, or shut down completely and just abort mission and go do something else, which I think a lot of people do both of those during those times. Given what you just said about having a hard time trusting yourself, like, how did that present itself during times of crisis?
If I'm being honest, I think the way that I've got to understanding myself and listening to myself and choosing myself first is because there's been times in my life when I didn't. And when I was like, you know what, I'll just listen to them and I'll just do it their way. But through those times that happened and it didn't go the way that I wanted, and I actually was like, this is what I knew was going to happen. Long story short, it was like trial by fire. It was like the reason why I feel like I now am so much better at being like, no, I know that I do this way and that I want to listen to myself. It's because there's been times where I didn't do that and it didn't go the way that I wanted. So now, anytime that there is adversity for me, the first thing that I do is I spend time with myself. I check in with myself. I ask myself, how are you doing? Sometimes it's not that 8-year-old kid. Sometimes it's the 20-year-old version of me or the 25-year-old version of me. But I'm checking with all versions of myself. How are we doing? What do we need? We know how we can handle this. We're physically capable of handling this. We know that we have support. Like, what do we need? And I have those conversations with myself, and it allows me to actually, like, be the best person to support myself. And that's what I try to always do.
how have you learned to like to win that like the that war with your inner dialogue that can sometimes present itself as well when you're faced with the unknown, where you, I know there's been times in your life where you don't know how things are going to turn out. You want them to turn out a certain way, but you really don't know if it's going to. And it's easy at times for people to just throw in the towel, like I said, and just let that war with the mind win all the time. And they end up just not living the life they want. Other than just like sitting with yourself, which I know is obviously important, like what other things would you do to like get rid of the head trash that presents itself during the times of unknown?
Great question. The way that I feel like I've been able to understand my mind and what goes on within my mind and my body is I read a book a while ago called The Untethered Soul that just talks about you are not your thoughts. The book's super, super, super deep. You could probably read it every year for the rest of your life and some of it not fully translate. But the gist of it is just like, you're not your thoughts. And that took me into a rabbit hole of understanding myself and like understanding my thoughts and what's going on internally. And it, and that process for me has landed me to where I am today, which is where my belief is that everything that is happening inside your body, around you, in your life is happening for you. And I genuinely look at it that way. So I don't look at any thoughts that I have. I don't look at any sensations I have in my body, any feelings that I have, any experiences as this is bad. I look at it as this is happening for me. And I might not know the way that it is right now, but it is happening for me because I feel like I've chosen to trust that the universe is has my back and is trying to help and wants good for me. And I just really believe that. And I think that that's a choice that you get to make. I think you can be brought up with a lot of fear. And I grew up Catholic. And so I grew up with a lot of like fear ingrained in you. And I think that for me, like as I got older, I just started looking at it as like, dude, I don't think the world is that bad of a place. I think it's a lot of what you choose to look at and what you choose to focus on ends up growing. And so I put more intentional time into focusing on good outcomes, good perspectives, ways that I can look for the best in people, trusting that the universe or something outside of me that I don't control wants the best for me. And so that trickles down all the way into the thoughts that I'm having, into the feelings that I'm having, into the moments that I'm going through. Because if I feel like if I actually believe that something good is coming out of this, then I don't need to fight it. I don't need to be angry at it. I don't need to hate that part of myself. I don't need to be mean to that part of myself. I can work with it. I can accept it. I can move with it because I know that in some way it's trying to benefit me. And so I really believe that. I truly believe that.
How did you develop this optimistic mindset? Because you mentioned like you grew up Catholic and that can there can be a lot of like old school traditions there and stuff that can kind of maybe make you feel a little trapped. You mentioned that your dad was very supportive, but also like old school, like didn't understand social media. So like how did you learn a lot of this stuff so that you can be able to navigate situations in your life in such a, I mean, not just optimistic in a Pollyanna way, but optimistic in realistic way?
You know what? It's actually a great question because I think it was partially that I was born with it. Because now spending more time with my grandma and my mom is now making content on social media and showing my grandma. And my grandma is 91, super healthy, super active. And her whole thing is that her whole life has been predicated on her attitude and like the way that she's approached every day and like been optimistic. So I don't think that it's like something that I do think part of it is I was born with optimism and like really just like it was just like given to me. The second half of it is, I think that when I was playing hockey, I started realizing that a lot of the people that I was around that had negative, complaining, frustrated, pessimistic attitudes were the people that weren't having the success on the team. And the people that showed up every day with optimism and with a willingness to put in the work and with communication and with really like a good attitude, those are the people that I was seeing crush it. Those are the people that I was seeing go on to have real success. And so I think it was both. I was born with it, and it was, I learned optimism because I saw pessimism and how it didn't work. So I was like, I'm not going to be like that. I got to put extra effort into being optimistic and really looking for the good in things, because that's going to get me to a better place.
I've also heard you say that you have this healthy relationship with pain, because it's led to some of your greatest strengths and has led to who you are today. How have you developed such a healthy relationship with pain?
By being forced to be put through it and seeing myself come out the other side with a better quality of life. I mean, dude, I don't think there was any moments in my life before I had gone through pain that I was choosing it, that I wanted it, that I was looking for it. I think that there was situations that were hard growing up, or in hockey, or in retirement, that life threw me into those situations. And by going through those situations, better things came out of it. And it wasn't always trauma or like devastation. Like, I also think going to trainers that I worked with when I was younger that were really hard, that forced you to show up and put in the work and go hard, and me not wanting to do it, but then me actually doing it and seeing, wait a minute, I'm in a way better shape now by this guy putting me through this. I think that seeing the success that came with, like, when you're willing to go through it and you actually make up your mind that pain can be something that's good for you, especially when you're welcoming it, the success that I saw going through those made me want to do it more. And that made me be like, okay, this is something that I actually feel like is beneficial. And that led me to, when I went to Russia, it was like, I'm willing to go through whatever because I know this is only going to bring good for me. And it did. It really did.
So many people struggle with that, with pain, whether it's they lose a job, whether they go through a breakup, whether something else happens in their personal life, something financially. And because of that, they turn to unhealthy coping mechanisms or unhealthy things that make that pain much worse than it needs to be. What advice do you have for somebody that maybe is going through a time of reinvention? Maybe they're going through a breakup or something, and they're in a lot of pain right now. Like, what are some of the things that you think work on a daily or weekly basis for somebody to make the most of that situation?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is the majority of mental chaos and fogginess or hecticness, the majority of like heavy thoughts, the majority of like chaos going on in your mind is actually a symptom of not feeling what's going on in your body. It's like when things feel overwhelming in your body, you end up leaving your body and going into your mind to try and solve them and figure them out and understand them. So the biggest thing, when I first went to therapy, literally the first thing that my therapist said to me was, when things get too chaotic in your body, we try to solve them in our mind. So the whole work that you and I are going to be doing is learning how to identify and sit with and feel and allow what's going on in your body, and watch how clear everything just comes to you after that. And that literally has been a foundational thing for me still today. It's how do you get closer to feeling the feelings that are in your body? And then you just learn to tolerate little bits and little bits and little bits more of the feelings that are happening in your body, which is what we refer to as pain. So the first, like the real advice that I would give to everybody is like, take the time to learn how to feel. Take the time to learn how to feel and how to express what you're feeling and how to sit with what you're feeling. And that is the way that I navigate all of my pain. Because if you're willing to feel and you're willing to sit with it, a lot of things take care of themselves. A lot of things clear up. Life gets easier. And that's the thing that I would give, that I think most people would find the most benefit with, is actually getting closer to their body and sitting with feelings.
What's been a recent experience for you where you've had to do that?
The last year, my fiance and I separated for 2 months completely out of the blue. It's something that she felt like she needed to take time and just be solo, because she had a lot going on in her own personal life that she needed to sit with. And it was completely random, completely out of the blue for her and for me. And in that moment of just uncertainty, it was like, that was very physical. It was very like just sitting with the unknown. And like my body is, your body is just like, your body's wired for survival. So it's like predictability is survival. So when there, things are unpredictable, your body goes into like real, like, whoa, what's going on? So that moment for me, even though I knew it was like, this is a moment, we're going to get back together very soon. This is okay. She's got to go take this moment by herself and it's going to be all good. And it did. And it was a blip in our relationship. But those, that period for me was me doing exactly what I preach of like, I'm going to sit with myself. I'm going to feel what's going on. This is a hard moment. I got support. It's okay. I trust in the universe so that this is going to end good. This is happening for us. And I'm going to sit with myself and I'm going to take care of myself through this moment. And that's exactly what happened. And literally, like we were just talking, on the other side of pain comes things that are better a lot of the times. And the way that she feels with herself, the way that I feel with her, the way that we feel now back together is a level up of what it was before. And we didn't even know that that could be possible. And so majority of the time, it's a physical thing of sitting with the uncomfort and just being like, I'm going to move through this. I'm going to sit with this and it's okay. And things work out the way that they're supposed to.
I heard you say on a podcast, like, I think before all of this happened, that like, other than your relationship with yourself, your relationship with Sam is the most important thing to you. And when you went through that, it just, I know that so many people, when they go through situations like that, they don't have the composure that you were able to maintain. Obviously I've heard there was rocky parts for yourself emotionally, rightfully so. What was the hardest part of that for you? Because I think the audience can relate. Like, what was the most challenging part of that for you?
Not knowing the future. I mean, like, for anybody that doesn't know us, our relationship has always been, and I don't say this in an ego way, like, our relationship has always been awesome. It's been so easy. It just has never been rocky, ever. And it never was rocky. And then it was literally like one day she was like, I'm having intuitions that I need to be alone. It didn't mean, she didn't say any issues with you, any things going on with us. She was just like, I need to be alone right now. And I was like, what does that even mean? Like, we're engaged. What does that even mean? I don't understand. I said, I don't understand, but there was a part of me that was just like, this is okay. So anyways, that happened. And I think the hardest thing for me was just the uncertainty of it. Cause she was like, I don't know what it means. I need to be alone. I just need to go do this. I need to follow this. I can't tell you anything because I don't have any answers. I just know I need to do this. And I was just like, shit, I have to just completely let go, completely trust that this is going to happen for us, that this is okay. And whatever's supposed to happen is going to happen. And I just got to believe I got to believe in my intuition that this is good for us. The hardest part was the uncertainty. I'll put it this way. The analogy that I say it to anybody is it felt like for that period of time, the 2 months, it felt like I was sitting in an ice bath for 2 months straight. Genuinely, the discomfort just felt like I was in an ice bath. There was no pain where it was like she wasn't hurting me, like she wasn't trying to hurt me. There was no like animosity about it. There was no like situation that happened. I wasn't in actual, like, I didn't get injured, but it felt like the way you sit in an ice bath of like, this is just so uncomfortable and I don't know what's going on and my body just feels really uncomfortable. So I don't know. I feel like a lot of situations in my life have prepared me more and more for uncomfort, because when I was training in for hockey, when I moved away from family when I was younger, when I played in Russia, getting cut from teams, I think all of these different situations of uncomfort have just taught me to just sit with it and trust that it's going to be okay if I just sit with it. So it was a really challenging moment of just uncertainty. Now I look at it and we'll look at it even more as we continue on of like, that was really beneficial for her. She needed that moment. And now I feel it just feels even better with us. But yeah, dude, the uncertainty was just really challenging.
I know you surround yourself with like a good core group of people and the people that you spend time with is important to you, but did you have anybody like chirping in your ear, like trying to get you to do like something you didn't want to do?
I think a lot of people on social media are hurting and they go to social media to try and find ways to feel better about the hurt that they're going through. So anything that they can chime in on, anything that they can throw their two cents at and kind of displace their own pain that's going on within them, it can be really easy to do that. And so there was, I actually would say, I didn't get any hate. I didn't get any, like, people weren't malicious. People weren't mean. I just think people were sending me messages of like, move on, bro. Go, like, I got a party this weekend if you want to come to it. I got people I can hook you up with, like things like that. But people weren't mean at all. People were nice. And I really think I'm such a believer that the energy that you put out into the world comes back to you. And that's the same thing with social media. If you're putting out good into social media, you get that back. And I feel like I've been putting out good. So I feel like I get back good. And in that situation, I was really fortunate to get back a lot of good, and people were really kind and nice during that time.
That's awesome, because it's easy to fall into those traps, especially when you don't really know yourself and you don't know what you want. It's easy to like listen to what certain people are saying and saying, oh, like, am I making the right decision or should I be doing this? And it's cool that you were able to just maintain like what you wanted, trust your intuition, just sit in the suck for a little while. And now you guys are in such a great spot.
Before you continue, the way that I feel like I've been able to get to hearing my intuition so clearly is by spending so much time with myself, crafting, like learning that craft of hearing my intuition. Like I was unfortunate that I had to move away from home to go pursue my career of hockey when I was 15. But I also was fortunate that in a lot of those years, I spent a ton of time alone with myself, having to sit with and understand myself and learn all the things going on inside of me. And how do I work with this? And what do I want? And what actually feels right? And how do I know if I'm moving in a direction that I feel like is something that feels good for me? All that stuff was stuff that I had to learn. So for anybody that's listening, I think a big part of it is start taking those moments to yourself and really just checking in and asking yourself, what do I want out of this situation, out of life, out of these moments I'm going through? And how does it feel in my body when I know something is good? If when you get clear on that feeling, that to me is intuition. Like my intuition, it feels like, it just feels right. It feels calm. It feels ease. It feels good. The more that I feel that, the more I'm like, I'm on the path that I'm supposed to be on.
How has you getting better at trusting yourself and being more confident with your intuition impacted your ability to create online?
Oh man, dude, it's insane. We are fed different examples of ways that we can show up on social media every moment that we scroll. So every time that you go and look on your feed, it's giving you information as to what's working in the world of social media and how you should show up if you want your stuff to work as well. So if you're not clear on yourself, if you don't check in with yourself and actually ask yourself what you want and know that and hear yourself, you're just going to be like this, pulled all over the place all the time. So for me, this is why I say that everybody that's in the social media world and in the business world is playing a game of wellness, whether they choose to or not. Because if you don't actually understand yourself and spend time with yourself and hear yourself and know your intuition, you're playing everybody else's game. You're not even playing your own game that you create. Whereas if you really know what you're going for, you know who you're doing it for, you know why you're doing it, you know how to find enjoyment in the process yourself, then none of the other stuff matters. Nobody else's opinions matter. And you're able to move at your own pace, do what you want, feel good on your own terms. And it just becomes a lot more peaceful.
I've heard you say that systems are meant to be built and they're also meant to be broken, something to that effect. Other than this past, you know, relationship, small hiccup that we just talked about, what's been something else in your life that you've been forced to grow from? Like, what's been a big moment, like what's been a big like area of your life that you've grown a lot in the last 6 months or so?
So for systems are meant to be built and then they're meant to be broken. The way that I look at that is innovation a lot of the time comes from completely changing the script of how something is. And when I got into traditional marketing and building things through social media, it was like that wasn't a way that you marketed yourself 10 years ago. It was like it was a new format, particularly for athletes. Athletes were not marketing themselves through social media, especially hockey players. So the way that I looked at it is like the way that the system is built right now for athletes to create their own brand and brand identity was you have to go through an agency and they have to find you the right places to be exposed and shown and marketed. And the way that I looked at it was like, that's broken. I think that that system it's the right time for it to be broken. And the way that it breaks is through social media and through using the internet. So I think systems are always built and created. And then as they get bigger and bigger and bigger, something smaller comes along and innovates and does something a different way and then builds system around that. And that becomes a new system. So I think social media as a whole is the way that I look at me leveling up. I think that if I wasn't putting out content on social media, what I've been able to accomplish in the last 3 years would have taken me 15. Like if I went to a traditional marketing agency, went in, was like, let me just help. And I wasn't posting myself at all. I wasn't putting myself out there. The conversations I've had, the people I've been able to meet, the rooms I've been able to be in would have been at least 7, 8, 9 years down the road. And so I think that social media has really helped me level up. And I'm so grateful for it because of that.
You help people create content. You create content. There's been a lot of negativity surrounding social media, specifically TikTok, in the last few years. And yet, like, there's so many people that use it to better themselves. They're learning recipes. They're learning how to fix stuff. They're meeting people. They're learning new fitness tips, nutrition stuff, inspirational messages, etc. What advice do you have for people who are consuming content in today's world where they're just constantly being fed so many different things? Like, how can they consume it in a way where it's actually helping them grow and not sending them down this downward spiral?
Dude, I think the real answer is it's self-awareness. And I think it's kind of like a therapy thing, because really what a lot of people are doing on social media is they're going there to get a hit of dopamine. They're going there to really just like numb the way that they're feeling in their body if they're not looking at it. And so I think that the answer to that is people have to spend time with themselves being like, if I don't go on this and I don't scroll, what goes on in my life, in my body, in my mind? Because that's the place to start. Because you're right, social media is a tool. It can be used to build great things and it can be used to destroy your own well-being. And I think there's examples of, like, I would even say for me, like, a lot of the times when I go on social media, I'm getting something beneficial out of it. And I'm not leaving it with it being like, this really was taxing on me. I also have experienced other times where I'm like, oh, I'm doing this out of a response to a way that I'm feeling, and this isn't serving me. The real answer is like, people need to go and spend time with themselves and understand what is it that's going on that I need to avoid and that social media is allowing me to avoid. And if I heal that and work through that, the way that I show up here and what I'm consuming on here won't be as addicting and won't be as harmful.
So do you think that no matter what the person's age is, that they should be at least having some footprint on social media? I mean, when I say age, I mean, there's some people that are in their 40s, 50s, 60s that are like, oh, it's too late. Like, I don't need that. Like, but it's like, if the world has shifted there and it's going to continue to shift, do you still think it's important for people like that to be involved?
I don't think everybody needs to be on social media, especially if you don't want to. It's just the quickest way to get to where you want to go in 2024. Like, say you're like, you know what? I don't want social media. I don't want a phone. I want to just do getting my word out there by in-person experiences and seeing people in real life. Just the amount of people that you're going to get in front of and meet and connect with is going to be at a much smaller number than what you can accomplish by doing it through social media. I don't think it's a bad thing for people to not have social media. I think you should follow what you want to do. And if you don't want to, then don't do it. But I think that it's just the easiest. There's nothing that comes close to, even with all of the people doing it today, there's nothing that comes close to doing the damage you can do for free on social media out there in the world.
You know, I asked Gary Vee, it was a couple of years ago. I asked him about like the fact, like somebody who's looking to build their brand, get their message out there. And obviously his message for years has been content, 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 right? Content, content, content. What are your thoughts on now as we're in 2024? Like, what do you think is the best way for somebody to build a personal brand online?
I still think it's content, 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 but I think it's, especially when you're starting, it's content, 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 because you don't know what's going to work and you can't come up with the perfect answer of what's going to work without posting it. So you can have the best plan, but first you need to, you at least need to be posting some things to see if that is the truth. So I still think it's content, content, content. I think as you continue to post more and more of it, you start tweaking it and making it look the way that you feel like the audience cares a little bit more, what the platforms are prioritizing. But I still feel like it's content, content, content. And then it's also getting in real life and spreading the information that you want to spread in real life from meeting people and having interactions, from going to community events, from going to bigger events, from if you have a product, getting your product into the hands of people. It's spreading your information like it's kind of like literally like a virus, like getting your things that you want to share into the people around you in the world, both online and in real life.
JT, this conversation's been awesome. Definitely, I think maybe a different side of you in much more context that maybe people aren't as familiar with. I really appreciate your vulnerability, just being so open and willing to share everything. If people want to connect with you online, if they want to find out more about Barnett X, what you're doing with that, like where's the best place to do that?
All my socials are just JT Barnett. I would love for you guys to say hi. I love doing this podcast. This was really, really fun. So I would love for you guys to say hello and send me a message on particularly Instagram is probably the one I check the most, but really grateful.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much again for coming on the show. The audience can get a ton of value out of this, and I appreciate it once again.
Thank you, brother.